Hey buddies, it's the Massive Report podcast. It's brought to you by 180 Property Develop. 180 Property Development creates uplifting environments that enrich community life in Columbus, Ohio. Their team of passionate design, planning, and construction professionals aren't just dedicated to seeing projects from the initial design concept to final completion. They're dedicated to enriching the quality of community life. Have a property design and/or development need? Build something together with 180 Property Development. Learn more at 180propertydevelopment.com. So, buddies, you probably notice I am not Brian Phillips. To let you know a little bit more about the inner machinations of the Massive Reports, Brian is actually our podcast equivalent to a designated player. And like any good DP, think Beckham, think Pirlo, think Drogba. His agent negotiated a clause in this contract that basically allows him to skip out on any of the shows that we record using Google Hangout, kind of like Drogba and you know, Beckham would do that for travel or playing on AstroTurf. So you're stuck with me, Bart Logan. We've got Mike Krosky with us, Alex Stanek with us, Ralph Schudel back. And we've got another crew loss to talk about. 1-0 dropping it over the weekend in Minnesota in beautiful Allianz Arena. The goal scored by none other but Ethan Finley. We'll get to that. But first, you know, we'll talk about what went wrong. And Mike Krosky, man, when that starting 11 came out, I felt like I was excited. You look and see up front David Akam, Robinho, you know, the newly minted DP Giassi, Zardes, and you think, what are they, you know, what can they do with that speed up there, what they might be able to create against a Minnesota team, and they managed to create two shots, none on target. That's it. A pretty disappointing performance, you know, across the board, but certainly on the attacking side for Columbus.
Yeah, I mean, to say that was anticlimactic would be an understatement. You know, when we saw Akam and Robinho, and I was actually excited to see what Kempen could do as well this year, him getting his first start. Obviously, he didn't play bad at all. But yeah, offensively, we just looked completely anemic. And it seemed like oftentimes, you know, we had maybe three people in the offensive attack against four, five, six defenders. I mean, I'm not a mathematician, but that's not normally going to work out well for you.
And it didn't. This is a crew team that managed just four total shots, none on target. And on the other hand, Minnesota, 19, it looks like, shots. You know, they only managed a handful on target, but it seemed like they were creating chances all the time. You look at there were two goals in the first half, Alex, that were disallowed because Minnesota was in an offside position, but they were clearly attacking throughout the game, led by Darwin Quintero, who had a couple good chances. And this is a Columbus team that just didn't look like they ever really were there competing.
Well, they didn't look like they were there competing. They also weren't really seeming to be sure of what they were supposed to do. Under Berhalter and frankly under Varzia and under Sigi Schmid, you had an identity and you knew what the team was going to try to do when they would go out and they would play. And I still have no idea what the crew are trying to do offensively right now. The players were all over the place. They weren't really counterattacking. They weren't really playing possession soccer. I don't know what the heck was going on. I thought it was horrible, to be totally honest with you. It was one of the worst performances I've seen from a crew team that I can recall offensively. I think that their expected goals was 0.17 or something stupid like that. I think it was the second lowest of any team in the league so far this season.
Good Lord.
It was just not acceptable. And I don't know what Porter is trying to get these guys to do in the final third, but it was clearly not working. They were not able to get any sort of chance creation going. And to be honest with you, I think that they are really lacking creativity. I think we are missing a creative player who can make things happen. I think Pipa's getting closed down so quick that nothing can get going from him. And we're not getting any sort of creation from anybody else. And it's just horrible. It's just horrible.
I think the biggest thing is when there's – you're talking about the identity and what Porter's trying to do. I think we really underestimated the loss of Milton and Harrison Offal. I mean,
so I was going to ask.
That's where I think if you want to talk about an identity, that's where this team should be successful. And we're using what our fourth and fifth string, essentially outside backs, with Hector Jimenez, who is just a utility type player, and Williams, who's more of a center back with experience at outside back, but if you had to find his best role, it wouldn't be at right back. So I think that's what you're seeing. My confusion is, why is Porter continuing to go with this scheme and formation when the current players that are available and are on the field from game to game, it doesn't suit well for a team to be offensively successful, because the whole idea of the 4-2-3-1 that he runs is predicated on getting fullbacks up. I'm sorry, but Hector Jimenez and Josh Williams aren't the guys that can get up and make things happen. And so I'd like to see him move to another formation.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I think it's telling in terms of how much confidence or trust Caleb Porter places in the guys that are sort of on the margins right now on his bench. And by that, I mean he's got very little of it. You'd think in a scenario where both of your starting outside backs are out, you know, out of commission, and in an away game against Western Conference foe, that hey, if Connor Maloney's ever gonna see the pitch, it's gonna be this game against Minnesota, not that. And I think that's telling. I think Caleb Porter right now is putting the only guys that he feels like he has any confidence out there in, with the exception of, you know, maybe Pedro Sanch, who's now, of course, as I've always been, really big on him. And obviously Caleb Porter has a lot of confidence in him. But, you know, it just seems like he's got, you know, his guys, and they're in the starting 11. And otherwise, you know, he's got a lot of question marks with the guys that last year we thought, well, hey, Crew have some great depth.
Well, and I really wonder, you know, I wonder about his midfield choices as well as the whole thing on the wings. Guzman is a good player, but he is not really showing me much in the way of creativity. And I don't know what's going on with Artur. I know he hasn't put in great shifts this season so far, but I really think we're missing some of that flair that he had last season when he was, you know, stringing together some really beautiful passes, creating space for other guys and allowing us to really hit people on the counterattack. I know before the season started, what we heard from Caleb Porter was that he wanted to counterattack, essentially, hit teams on the counter very quickly and convert chances. That is not the system that they are playing today. If they are, they're the worst counterattacking side I've ever seen. I'm not really sure what he's trying to do at this stage. I know that we are down a couple guys. Valenzuela is a huge loss. But, yeah, I think that it's time to rethink the playbook, at least for this season, because what they are trying is not working. You've got a defense that's functioning. You've got a midfield that is kind of working out. But you get in that final third, and there is nothing. It is just not working.
Let's look at the other end of the pitch. John Kempin getting the start, I believe his first of the season. And looking at it, we're quickly staring down, you know, the final game for Zach Steffen. I think the consensus seems to be that it'll be June 1st. I think I know, Mike, last week we talked about when the Gold Cup, call-ups are coming in, but at least what I've heard, it seems like that just May 27th date is for the international folks. And so Steffen should be there for that June 1 game, but in a post Zach Steffen world, does this performance from John Kempin give anybody here much encouragement for Crew's chances, you know, once he leaves?
I don't know that you can just go off of this game, and I know he's had some experience in the past as well. I think it's a little too soon to say. Just like on the flip side, I wouldn't say you throw in the towel necessarily for Bendik either. So I think when it comes to training, those two guys are really going to have to show themselves, and especially, as you said, as we get closer to the final days and game for Steffen. But I don't want to say I feel like, yay, oh, Kempin or Bendik, those are the guys we can count on. But I do think that we're in a situation where we just need one of them to step up and take the job away from, well, not from Stefan, but take the job and say, this is mine. And I don't think either of those guys have done that so far.
Yeah, and I think that there are other options available. I mean, I would definitely look at bringing somebody in. I'm not sure who you would want to get, but I definitely think that there are people in the league who are better suited to do the job than Kempin, honestly, or Bendik. One thing that I've seen tossed around is getting somebody in who has more of like a local flavor, and I'm not sure that this is a great idea, but I would be tempted to trade Bendik or Kempin and try to bring back Matt Lampson or somebody like that, especially if you have Trapp leaving. At least then you can have some sort of a local Save the Crew tie with things. But in general, I think that the defense is not the problem. So if Kempin or Bendik is the answer, I'm much less concerned about our ability to stop goals than I am about our ability to score them. So I would really want the money that we get from Stefan spent in the final third. Otherwise, I mean, you might as well just tank the season and save everything up for next year and try to, you know, rebuild.
Yeah, and looking at that final third, I mean, you mentioned, Mike, somebody needing to kind of one of these goalkeepers wanting to come up and take it and take that starting position and run with it. It felt like, again, with the exception maybe of Frederico Higuain, that there just didn't look like anybody in the black and yellow that was interested in actually scoring a goal. You know, there's the nice layoff that Zardes has that leads to that Pipa one that he rang off the post, the only good opportunity for Crew the entire game. But this is a Zardes, you know, player that the Crew made just days before this game a designated player at the striker position and doesn't manage a shot against Minnesota. And it just, I know we were talking about this earlier. I'm so flabbergasted in how ineffectual all of these otherwise productive MLSers, you know, even if we say, okay, last year, you know, we're not going to get another 19-goal season from Jossie Zardes. I don't think that's unrealistic, and I don't think that's, you know, an unfair thing to say that we don't expect that. But it just doesn't seem like there's any sort of killer instinct from anybody on this team or just a level of competitive vigor other than Frederico Higuain and then maybe some of those guys on the back end.
Yeah, I mean, Zardes has never been a guy who can create his own opportunities. And really, I think a lot of his play in a Porter-type system would be to draw defenders in and wingers kind of make diagonal runs and he leaves the ball off, then maybe gets it back and scores that way, or maybe he's a guy that's dishing out assists that way. But again, the wingers aren't really making those diagonal runs because we don't have any fullbacks making the runs up the wing, at least not consistently enough or effectively enough, to send in crosses and to make the defense be concerned about them. So it becomes very easy for an opposing defense to go, okay, we have three guys here. We have four defenders generally, not counting a holding mid that or two that might drop back. So there's really no way for Zardes to score because he has nothing coming to his feet. And again, look at the goals he scored this year. One was that really nice left that I would think more often than not he would have missed. You guys remember that game? He had a left where it was a one-time touch, but I don't want to say it's luck because I think that's undeserving of his abilities, but I don't think that's something that's going to score all the time.
Well, he'd skied one the previous week in a very similar situation. Maybe it was him learning from it, but yeah, I don't disagree.
Yeah, and then so when you have ineffective wingers and nobody available to kind of create opportunities or even poaching opportunities, because that's where I think Zardes could be successful in a Porter system, I don't know how he's going to score because he's not going to create chances himself.
So I kind of wanted to circle back real quick to the goalkeeping situation. You guys were talking about bringing Matt Lampson in. I can't get on board with that. But so anyway, what I did was I went on Transfer Market real quick to pull up expiring contracts of goalkeepers. So this is worldwide, and I just kind of I took it down to
Iker Casillas, baby.
Not Iker. Well, God love him. Thankfully, he survived the heart attack that he had a few weeks ago. But there's some really good goalkeepers here who have expiring contracts, and at about sub 4 million, that you know you could spend a little bit of that Steffen money on, and maybe some Tamer Gam to buy the contracts down. But Guillermo Ochoa, for those guys and gals that are very familiar with the Mexican national team, 33 years old. He's playing in Belgium, it looks like there. But
You're not the first one who's kind of brought that up to me actually before, and I'm a little bit I can bite on that a little bit. I think he would be one of those guys, especially when you're talking about trying to. I mean, his record with the Mexican national team, and he could be a guy who's just potentially a draw for that Hispanic and Latino audience as well. And he'd be a very competent MLS keeper.
Yeah, I think he would be. I think he would do just fine in MLS. Adrian, who is the goalkeeper for West Ham, he could be. He's got an expiring contract coming up. Michel Vorm, the backup to Hugo Lloris at Tottenham, would be a good addition to relatively inexpensive, but Gigi Buffon's got an expiring contract with PSG. PSG already said they're going to offer him a new contract, so that's out the window. But Willy Caballero, I think the guy that he's an old guy, but he's with Chelsea. You know, that could be an option. And then there's an interesting name here, and I'll be really surprised. I bet you maybe Mike knows the name, but Stefan Miranovic, who was the
he was with Toronto, wasn't he?
No, he was with Vancouver.
Vancouver.
And he's over in Bristol City in the championship, and he's 27, and it says that his wage is going for roughly about 630 euros, roughly. So, I mean, that's pretty close to a mil or so in U.S. buckaroos. But, you know, he's a decent goalkeeper from what I remember. He did pretty well. I think he came in after Usted left Vancouver.
Yes, he was very serviceable.
Yeah, so, I mean, that you know, if you're looking for youth and somebody that you could build around, you know, I think you go a couple years older than Steffen, right? Because Steffen just turned 24 or 23,
yeah,
something
he's
24. Like that. Yeah, so, I mean, he's a couple years older than Steffen, but a lesser investment. Maybe you could try to build him back up. But, you know, there's no problem raiding the free agent market, I believe.
Well, you know, if you're thinking of guys in-house, and what I mean by that is MLS, you know, what about some guys that are sitting on the bench right now? I mean, you have a Zach McMath, who, again, I'm not saying these guys are world beaters or Steffen-like, but
clearly, I do like Zach McMath. He is one that crossed my mind recently.
Yeah, I mean, a guy like that who's just been sitting for a while. He was the starter for Philly for a while, and now he's just kind of bounced around. You know, and then another name, what about Ryan Mira from New York? He was a starter for a while. Robles comes in and never leaves. But Mira's still relatively young for a keeper. I think he's 27, 28, and he can play. I don't know, guys like that. I don't know what their availability are. You would think a guy like Ryan Mira would want to leave. He's been sitting behind Robles for 5-6 years now. He's earned his right to go somewhere else and get a starting opportunity, I feel like. So there are options out there. Again, they're not Steffen level, but like we talked about in the podcast last week, there's not a Zach Steffen store available where you can just get another one off the shelf.
Yeah, I think when a guy isn't starting in MLS, that's pretty indicative of his skill set. I mean, I think a lot of the way you're describing those guys, I think a lot of people would have described John Kempin a couple of years ago. You know, coming from SKC and then, you know, in LA Galaxy getting some times before he came into Columbus. But I do want to talk about, you know, one other player who already left the Columbus Crew, and I feel like we need to. It was poetic. It was, of course it was going to happen, and that was Ethan Finley scoring the game winner against Crew on a smart play there from that short corner from Minnesota. After they just seemed to be abusing Columbus and Caleb Porter on those set pieces throughout the game. They had those couple that were called back in the first half, but this time Ethan Finley left no room for doubt. I think a little bit bittersweet. What are your thoughts, guys? What were you feeling watching Ethan Finley put that one in?
I mean, I was less upset about that than I was about our performance. I mean, Ethan Finley is a great player. I wish we had someone who had his engine right now. He's one of these guys who just doesn't quit no matter what. It's like if you've ever played FIFA and you're just holding down right trigger all the time, sprinting until your guy's dead at the end of the game, like 80th minute. That's Ethan Finley. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's just a workhorse. I feel like this crew team needs a guy with grit like that. I feel like we're missing some of that a little bit. But, you know, I'm happy for him. That's his hometown team. It was cool for him to get to go back and play for Minnesota in their first season and continue with them. And fans seem to like him up there, and I'm sure he likes it up there as well. So, you know, very happy for him. But, you know, would have preferred to hold on to it, but we didn't deserve to win that game or get a draw. Mm. I mean, we were horrible. So if it had to be somebody, glad it's Ethan Finley.
It seems morbidly poetic in a way, and it kind of got me thinking, you know, given the next game, we're playing a gentleman named Kai Kamara in the Colorado Rapids. I'm hoping we don't see a similar goal scored by him against us. But just to circle back real quick, Bart, when you were talking about the keepers, I agree with you because, again, the keepers that are going to be available right now are going to be bargain bin type guys, more or less. But where I will say I disagree when it comes to the Kempin comparison and things like that is when it comes to Ryan Mira, because you have to think the guy in front of him has just been a monster for this 7 years. I mean, Luis Robles, you know, he has the all-time starts record in the league. Ryan Mira, you know, he's had a cup of coffee. He's an American, but he has citizenship with Ireland. He's had a cup of coffee with the Irish national team. So I really think if he's available, I don't see why you don't throw some allocation money or something like that at the Red Bulls to see why not. Again, he's 28. That's when goalkeepers are really starting to get into their prime. No. So I would love to see a move like that.
You know who else is available too?
Who's that?
Jonathan Klinsmann.
Oh, boy. Wait, he's available?
Well, no, but he is going
for... well, no.
I have American goalkeepers up under 30, and he was coming up in my list. But he's affordable. He's at only just a measly 135 euros a market value. Interesting. So, yeah.
We would have to move. I still think we'd have to move Kempin or Bendik in order to get another goalkeeper, though. And I feel like if you're going to move one in the kind of condition we're in, I would still move down. I would sell one and get somebody who is a for sure backup. A guy like Lampson or Stuver. Just get somebody fun in who the fans like. Settle on one of those two guys as your long time number one, at least until the end of the year. You can reevaluate then. And then I would pump all that Stefan money into somebody who can create stuff.
How much of the Stefan money did the team actually get? Because I've seen...
Oh, yeah. What about Don Garber's cut?
Well, you know, in pre-court, didn't he get a piece of that too or something? I don't know.
Probably. It's an MLS.
So I'm curious how much money they actually received from that, and thus how much of it could they put towards such a move?
I'm not 100% certain about this, so don't take this as gospel, gentlemen, or any listeners out there. I believe the split is generally 70-30 between the team getting a cut of the transfer and 30% between the league. So I'm not too certain. At least those are the numbers that are popping out of my head, at least as recent as the Giancarlo Gonzalez transfer when he left for Italy. So I'm not too certain on that exactly.
I think the big question mark was, since this was kind of an unprecedented situation with an owner more or less having a franchise, supposedly, with Austin, with Precourt, but he was still the owner of this team that had, you know. So I don't really know what the numbers actually broke down to. I think maybe we can do some research on that. But
this could be a question for Pat, too, later on down the road, but I believe again, speculation, that Stefan was technically property of Columbus Crew SC and was included in the sale with the roster and everything. That was part of the agreement with getting the Haslams and Dr. Edwards to buy. So that was, you know, the intellectual property of the rosters, the colors, everything like that. I believe the roster was included on that sale. I'm not certain. Somebody that's much smarter out there, I'm sure, will tweet at us and let us know. But that was my understanding.
Nobody's smarter than you, Ralph.
Everybody's smarter than me. Everybody is. So the college team I'm with is smarter than me.
If Stefan was not a Generation Adidas player, and he's not homegrown. So according to this, it would be 2/3 that they would get. So, I mean, they would get well over $2 million in transfer fee. Now, I'm not sure how that's divided, but that's still enough money to bring in a really decent player. Now, when they bring that money in, or when they bring that player in, is kind of going to be up for debate. At this stage, you know, do you give that money to Porter? Like, is Porter for sure your guy? Because, you know, I don't know.
Hold on.
If we go another 2 months in the kind of form we're in, he's going to be on the hot seat.
No,
I mean,
he's not. No, he's not, because Edwards and the Haslams are understanding this is a long-term proposition, and that Porter, A, wasn't given much lead-up time, B, the team itself didn't have really much of an opportunity to scour the transfer market and pick up players. He also signed a 5-year deal. There's no way they're going to can him now and be on the hook for 4.5 years. The Haslams are looking big picture. Players and fans look at today, but coaches and front offices, good ones anyway, look big picture. There's no way Porter's not going to be here.
Well, I think the difference is that this is a pretty unique scenario. I mean, you have new ownership coming in. You have a lot of momentum off of Save the Crew that you really want to capitalize on leading into this new stadium that you're going to spend over $200 million on. I think this team needs to be in win-now mode in order to kind of keep that momentum going, keep the attendance up. And then when you open that new stadium, you hit the ground running and you have that Sporting Kansas City type effect. So if it's not working with Porter, I think you bite the bullet and you move on. Now, do I think that's going to happen? I don't think that they're going to need to. I think this team's going to figure it out and you know, turn it around. On paper, this team is so much better than what we're seeing right now. And, you know, people have talked about expected goals and stuff like that, but I think this team is going to figure it out on the offensive side, and when they do, you know, the results are going to start to turn around.
I don't think the roster is as equipped as you might think. I think that is Crew fandom, you know, like looking through the Crew-colored glasses. Compared to other MLS teams, I mean, we're like we talked about a couple weeks ago when Murph was on the show, we're in a different ballgame now with MLS. Even MLS of 2015 with Columbus and Portland making MLS Cup, not a lot of high-money players there. But I think we're kind of in that MLS 3.0, and I think we're seeing that on the field. And to say that, you know, they need to capitalize now, I think the big thing is they need to be ready to be good when they get into the stadium. Winning now, I don't think, is their priority, especially given that they didn't have any time to bring in the types of guys that Porter needs and Porter wants to have fill the roles in a system that he needs to put in place. There's no way Porter's going to be on the hot seat for at least 2 years, at least.
Well, I think you need to look at a couple things. First of all, you know, is it win now? Or if you are not in a win now, do you need to think about mentality? Do you need to think about rebuilding so you can compete in there? Because when you look at a window for this team, look, we don't think that Will Trapp is necessarily long for this team. Frederico Higuain, again, any year that you're getting out of him is gravy. Look at question marks, you know, at Pedro Santos, he's going to be on the other side of 30 soon. Everywhere else, you've got guys that are either in their prime or aging or already on the other side of their prime, with the exception of maybe Artur and Milton, who, again, you don't know that they're necessarily long for this team. So I think the window for this team making noise with this core, you know, down the middle with Frederico Higuain, Giassi Zardes or whomever, you know, it's been the striker since Greg Berhalter there. It was kind of, you could just plug in whomever it was that they had, and you had a 15-goal score up there. But I think they've got a pretty small window with this core. So I think the question is, do you think, especially now as we look at it here in the present, in current day, this is a team that's lost 7 of their last 8. They've been shut out for 5 of those 8. If you don't think that this is a team that can get it done, then I think you need to start thinking about rebuilding, seriously thinking about rebuilding. Fred Harrison, awful when he comes back. He's 32, and he's coming back from a serious injury. One of the difference makers that you can argue that's out of the lineup for this team right now. I agree with you, Mike, that I don't think Caleb Porter is really on the hot seat. But at the same time, let's also talk, you know, if we're going to talk about the Browns, basically front office, if we're going to talk about Jimmy Haslam, I mean, look at what he's done with the Browns throughout his first couple of years. Maybe I'm hoping that it's indicative that D's been the one who's been the face of everything, and that Jimmy is hands off from a player personnel and team perspective. But you look what's happened for the Browns when he has had his hands on, and he's proven to be one of those kind of guys. So I wouldn't put it past them, especially also to the point where when you are an NFL owner, when you are a billionaire, you don't want to pay Caleb Porter out for, you know, 4.5 more seasons or 4 seasons worth of salary. He's got, we're not talking about Anthony Precourt money here. We're talking about NFL owner money. So he can, I don't think that puts it against him. Now, I do think he's got Bez. He's got people in there that know what they're doing, know how to build a team the right way. And in Bez's case, the right way when you give me some money to get some good, you know, high profile DPs. And Caleb Porter hasn't got that. And I think there is a recognition there on Bez's part, on the Haslam family's part, that and Edwards' family as well, that, you know, he needs some time and to actually, you know, put together a team to his liking. And I think that's also part of what might have been part of those conversations that made Columbus, you know, remember, the Crew were competing with other teams for Caleb Porter this offseason. LA, the Galaxy, were in those. They had, there was, you know, Caleb Porter sitting in the front row of Lakers games being wooed. So this is a guy who is pretty on demand, and you have to think that there are some sort of conversations about, hey, you know, look, it's going to be tough. You're going to kind of be hamstrung for much of this first season, but then we really believe in you and believe in, you know, what you can do to build this team and build a franchise, and we want to give you the freedom to do that. This is, you know, really testing that. I don't know if they said that thinking that, hey, we're going to go in and be in for some hard times before Caleb Porter really has the chance to cement his legacy on this team.
I think that's why, you know, I mean, the word that I mentioned earlier was good owner, right? Now, there are those guys who do the knee-jerk reaction and do silly things, right? We've all seen it before. But I also think when it comes to Jimmy Haslam, he's even outwardly said, I was learning when I was doing these things with the Browns. I've learned. And I think that's a key thing when it comes to the Crew. And I think now that he's been, 7 years in as the Browns owner, he sees some things that, looking back, maybe he wouldn't have done this. Maybe he would have done this a little differently. So ultimately, I would have to assume I was not a fly on the wall. But those conversations between Porter and the Haslams and Edwards had to say, hey, look, we're just taking over the team. The season starts in 2 months. You know, whatever it is.
Yeah.
We understand that this season we're probably not going to win the MLS Cup, but we're going to put the resources towards the stadium. And if it reminds me a little bit of what DC has done with Ben Olsen. You know, they stunk for a long time with Ben Olsen at the helm, but they were waiting until that new stadium opened up and they opened up their purses to get a guy like Rooney and get some top quality players. I think you're going to see the same thing. Porter is in no jeopardy whatsoever right now.
I think that the difference between Porter's situation and a lot of situations with new coaches is Porter's coming into a team that has proven itself over the course of a number of seasons to be a high quality MLS team. maybe not a cup winning team, but a team that could legitimately compete in the playoffs and go far. What we've seen so far under Porter is not progression, it's regression. And that's got to be concerning, not only to, you know, crew ownership, but also to crew fans. This is not a team that's moving in the right direction slowly. It's a team that's moving in the wrong direction at a pretty decent pace. I think that the next couple games are going to be really, really important for Caleb Porter and for this team. I don't know if you guys saw the post-match comments from Will Trapp, but he was pissed. And he should be pissed. And we need people to be pissed about results like that because it's not acceptable. You know, you can't lose 8 games in a row and have that be acceptable. So, you know, we'll see what they do in these next couple games. But I think Porter is potentially in danger of losing a lot of fans. I think he's even potentially in danger of losing that locker room. So we'll see what happens.
Definitely something to keep an eye on. The hope certainly is that crew can get something coming up this weekend against Colorado. Want to look a little bit elsewhere around MLS this past weekend. Quick run through the scoreboard, and if you know, anyone caught any of these games, feel free to weigh in. And Real Salt Lake with a big win over Toronto FC 3-0. Anyone catch that one? No? Thoughts?
I just saw some of the highlights. I didn't actually see the game, unfortunately. But I'm always happy to see Mike Petke win. I love that guy.
Oh, yeah. San Jose with the 4-1 victory over the Chicago Fire. We also had a scoreless draw between Philadelphia and Seattle. SKC and Vancouver tied at 1. Houston, a 2-1 win over DC United. One of the big surprises, Orlando City just stomping all over FC Cincinnati. You hate to see it. You really do.
Are you disappointed about that or no?
Yeah, it's really, really disappointing. It's always bad when the other team scores more goals per dollar than the ticket cost.
Whoa!
So it's tricky.
Oh, my.
I'm just kidding. You know what? The thing about Cincinnati is they are horrible, and I think they're going to stay horrible for a while. And I told Cincinnati fans this previous to the season starting, and they said, no, we're a very good team. And Alan Koch is going to get us there, and, you know, he's gone now, and I think they're going to have to kick a lot of their players out. You know, that really is the candle that, you know, I, you know, it lights my world up right now because everything else is very, very dark in the land of crew. But at least FC Cincinnati are somehow even worse than we are. Amazing. Amazing.
We got that going for us, which is nice. Elsewhere, you had the Red Bulls, a 1-0 win over Atlanta, draw between LAFC and Dallas, and a 1-0 win for Colorado, our opponent, upcoming opponent, over LA Galaxy. Want to quick go back to that San Jose Chicago game. Would be remiss if we didn't point out that in that game, 4 goals for Chris Wondolowski. He breaks Landon Donovan's record for most career goals in MLS with 148 goals. Guys, what do you think? I think that they are 148 meaningless goals.
But he still missed the one against Belgium.
Exactly. Nothing. He's never scored a goal that matters. They won MLS Cup twice, like his first 2 seasons in Houston, when he scored a grand total of 2 goals over those 2 seasons. Otherwise, he's got 5, like, he's got like 5 career playoff goals. And of course, the thing that he will always be remembered for is that miss versus Belgium. Chris Wondolowski is a meh player. I mean, I think it says more about MLS and the quality of players, and just the and that he's just spent his entire career in MLS. And just like as a war of attrition managed to be the all-time leading goal scorer.
I'm really surprised Joseph Martinez didn't break it last season when he scored like a million
goals
for Atlanta.
The thing that's fun about guys like Chris Wondolowski, I mean, they are very MLS-type players. I mean, Chris Wondolowski in a lot of ways is a very mediocre soccer player. Right? on the world stage, he's incredibly mediocre. He's like a budget Peter Crouch. And Peter Crouch is like a budget, I don't even know, Robert Lewandowski? I don't know. But he is just like your Costco Robert Lewandowski. But he's, you know, he's a player with, you know, a lot of history in this league. Seems like a very, very nice guy. And he's just a guy who's kind of just got to work and just done his job for a very long time, and now he's the record holder. It's very funny to me. The whole thing is very funny to me that you have Chris Wondolowski eclipsing Landon Donovan, who, in my opinion, is an incredibly overrated player. Very important, but very overrated and also kind of mediocre.
Yeah, but way head and shoulders better than Chris Wondolowski ever was.
I don't know. I think that Chris Wondolowski is the kind of player who does very well in Major League Soccer. And in fact, if I were an MLS coach, I would only buy physical target men. I would buy your Kai Kamaras and your Chris Wondolowskis and only those guys, because the defenses in this league are not good, and the referees are not good. And so you can get away with a little bit, and you can just, you know, muscle the other guy off the ball and head it in, and you're golden. You know, hat off to Chris Wondolowski. I think he's, you know, he deserves to go down in Major League Soccer history. But yeah, the Belgium miss is still going to bug a lot of people. But I still think he deserved to be on that roster. I'll defend that till the day I die. So, you know, congratulations, Chris.
With Wando, I go back and forth, because for a lot of the things you mentioned, that he does seem like a nice guy. He is a, you know, grab your lunch pail and get to work type of guy, which I appreciate. And he's also a success story in the sense that, you know, if you guys remember the old MLS Reserve League, he was in that, worked his way up to the, you know, the senior team, and now, you know, the rest is history. He's the number one goal scorer in league history. But, yes, I loathe him for that miss against Belgium. I also, like you, I feel like he is overrated, definitely. So it's this weird conundrum when it comes to a guy like that, because I want to root for him because he's kind of an underdog, but then I'm still just sour by that Belgium miss, and I feel like, how is a guy like this the number one goal scorer in our league?
Seriously.
So it is really bizarre. I mean, he obviously had that one huge season where he had, what, 27 goals, something like that?
And yep.
That, you know, that's
2012.
Like, yeah, 2012. So, wow, that was 7 years. Oh, my gosh. Time's flying by. Anyway, so, I don't know. I go back and forth. I would say he's just, yeah, he's your typical average MLS guy. I will say I do not agree with you, Stanek, that Donovan's mediocre. I don't think he's a world beater, but I certainly think he's above mediocre.
He's an above average, very good Major League Soccer player. And I love Landon Donovan. He's one of my all-time favorite U.S. national team players. I'll never forget that goal against Ghana ever until the day I die. But I just feel like a lot of the people that we put on pedestals, and I'll even throw McBride in there, and, you know, basically any Major League Soccer player that we hold near and dear, you know, they're these blue collar guys for the most part. Like Brian McBride was a blue collar striker. He just went out and just, you know, got to work and got it done. I think Wando's like that, but he's just not as talented. But a lot of credit to the guy. I mean, you look at his goals per game ratio. I mean, it's not horrible. I mean, he's got 144 goals in 299 appearances for San Jose. That's not that bad. So for a guy without a lot of talent, 144 goals with San Jose is pretty decent. I don't think we've had anybody close to that in career history who scored 144 goals. So, you know. It is what it is. This is a league full. We're a second or third tier sports league. We just have to embrace it. Embrace guys like Wando.
For reference, though, like Landon Donovan is just a year older than Wando and has been retired for like, I don't know, 3 years or so, and you know, scored all those goals with MLS teams. Granted, usually the best, you know, the best team in MLS for a decade or so, and with those Galaxy teams when they had all that money in the MLS you know, 1.5, 2.0 days. But regardless, you know, we're talking about and we're mad about still old World Cup performances, but we got the Gold Cup coming up this weekend, this summer, boys. And five crew players made it onto preliminary team rosters. You've got Will Trapp, Zach Steffen, and Giassi Zardes making it for the U.S., as well as, I believe, Waylon Francis and Guzman for Costa Rica, named to their preliminary rosters. What are your thoughts about the crew players? Do you see any surprises, and do you see any of these players making an impact for these teams throughout this tournament?
I don't think there are any surprises, especially when it comes to the U.S. and that trio. I mean, Berhalter's leaned on them quite a bit when he was with the crew, and certainly since he's taken over the U.S. team, so that's not a surprise. Guzman and Francis have, for the most part, been pretty consistent players with the Costa Rican national team, so that's not much of a surprise. I think from a U.S. standpoint, there are, you know, a couple names that I seem to have, you know, made people go, what the heck, a few head scratchers. Some people were still surprised, and I don't know why, by Michael Bradley. For me, it's kind of, hey, Berhalter wants a guy like that in camp, a veteran player, and I know he gets dumped on a lot, sometimes rightfully so, other times not so much. But overall, I don't think there were really any snubs. Now, as we get closer to the full roster, and they cut it from 40 to 23, that's when we might see some real surprises.
I don't have any takes on this. The thing about the Gold Cup for me, especially this year, I just don't care. I mean, you got the Women's World Cup coming up. I am super pumped about
it. Yep.
And so the Gold Cup to me is, I mean, what is the Gold Cup? What is that? Where is that in the ranking of international tournaments? I mean, that's the bottom of the barrel, right?
It's a cup that is gold.
Yeah, it's the bottom of the barrel. I mean, it's the thing that the U.S. wins, and we're like, yeah, we won the Gold Cup. But then it's all we win because no one else cares about it. It's the U.S. Open Cup of American international soccer tournaments. So, you know, I'm focused on the performances of, you know, the U.S. women who are going to go over there to France and, you know, destroy everybody, hopefully. I don't really care about the Gold Cup.
It is the equivalent to the Bluth family awarding themselves a Family of the Year trophy.
Nice.
Like, basically.
Well done, Bart. Well, you know, I think the biggest thing is I could care less if they win. I just want to see what Berhalter does with this group because, you know, it's guys not only MLS-based but over the pond as well. And I think the biggest thing is this is going to be one of the first times that we really get to see them in a meaningful competition under Berhalter. So I think that's what's going to be the most appealing. If they win the whole thing or not, I'm not going to lose a bunch of sleep over it. But I think we can really start to see what guys are going to be formidable in Berhalter's kind of progression as the national team coach. So I think that's what's the most exciting.
Do we know if Major League Soccer is taking a break for this tournament or not? Has anybody looked into that? They're not, right?
I think they are.
Are they?
I thought, yeah.
I think it was a week or two, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay, good.
It might be just be looking at crew's schedule, and they might just be having might just have time off because they've played so many games already. But I think there are a couple weeks off that they are taking for this tournament.
Yeah, it looks like they will break from June 14th to June 21st for the opening week of the Gold Cup. Because yeah, I mean that's the only thing. I don't want anybody to get hurt. Just everybody come home safe.
Yeah,
and then go U.S. women. In France and do whatever.
The last MLS game before the Gold Cup is June 8th, and then the next MLS game after that is June 22nd. So a couple weeks off. So pretty much, you know, the opening round or whatnot of the Gold Cup. So, you know, and it gives players a little mid-season break, even if they're not on a roster. Kind of lets them heal up and refresh a bit, which is always nice.
And honestly, we need a break. We need a break. This team needs time to regroup and time to figure out what in the heck is going on. Because I they need a come to Jesus moment right now. I mean, they really need to all sit around. You know, there are teams in Italy that go on these retreats when they're in really bad form. They'll stop talking to the press entirely. They'll go to some mountain training facility for like a week and not talk to anybody. And the coach will take all their cell phones and everything and just figure it out. I feel like this team needs that right now. Like, we need to figure it out. And maybe that break will help with that.
We're going to take a quick break ourselves, and by that I mean I'm just going to shout out one of our sponsors as we get ready to get into our preview for the upcoming game. As hopefully crew, if they don't get time to take a break before then, hopefully this can be a chance for them to kind of reset as they're taking on Colorado. But as we're getting into this, we want to remind you that the Greater Columbus Golden Boys and Girls Supporters Group / Lifestyle Brand are official sponsors of the Massive Report podcast. And they are now taking submissions for rail banner designs for the rails right in front of the GCG bag section in 102. If you are an artist or have lots of cool banner designs, tweet at GCG bag at GCG bag 96. Use the hashtag #GetRailed or the hashtag Tifo Sweatshop to submit your design ideas, and look closely if you've got a great one. You might see your design on the rail banner in 102 at right there at the corner when you see those great freak or corner kicks getting taken. Yeah, you could see your design there if you just tweet the Golden Girls and Boys at GCGBag96, the Greater Columbus Golden Boys and Girls Champions of Mega Tailgate. Definitely not failing, and official sponsors of the Massive Report. It's a thing. Colorado coming up. I kind of glanced over it when we were running through the scores, guys, because I didn't realize it until I looked at the standings. That win this weekend, Colorado's first of the season. This team is dog poop, and I don't know if I could pick Columbus to beat them right now. What do you guys see with this game coming up against the Rapids?
I would say, if the crew are not able to, at the very least, pull out a draw, there has to be a complete revamp of a formation, the schematics, all this kind of stuff. Because the Rapids, yes, they pulled out a win over the weekend at LA. Good for them. But the Rapids, if you've watched any of their games, they have been crap. Now, here's the thing. Connor Casey just took over.
So we got that going for us.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I still think that's bizarre, even from an interim standpoint. But what happens oftentimes when a coach gets sacked, players seem to step it up. And you saw a little bit of that. I caught a bit of that Galaxy Rapids match, and you saw a little bit of that. Players are playing, A, for their own jobs, and B, because they're tired of the constant losses. So really, this is the battle of who wants to be worst. So the team that loses this game will be right with FC Cincinnati for the worst in the league. And Columbus has to pull out a win here to feel like they can salvage anything moving forward. Again, I'm not saying hit the panic button or the season's over, but you go to Minnesota, who's been struggling, and you lose there and look anemic. If you go to Colorado and lose there against the team that finally won their first game of the season, some red flags we got to start going off.
Last week, Mike, you said 4 points out of these two games was what, or at least maybe you wanted or expected.
Yes.
So does that mean they need a win out of this one?
I'm being kind when I say they have to at least pull out a draw, but yes, mm-hmm. I think a win is really the only thing that would be acceptable, to be quite frank. I mean, you know, Tim Howard is looking old. Their back line for Colorado, actually, they've looked okay the last two games with Lawless back.
Lawless, yeah.
Kind of interesting. But he can't play against us, so we have that going for us. but they have Keegan Rosenberry. They have Kellen Acosta. I mean, again, they have good players on paper. I don't know what the heck was going on there before with Hudson as the coach. And I don't know how in the world Connor Casey's getting anything out of him, because he seems just inept from a tactical standpoint. But again, sometimes players just play out of their minds when a new coach takes over, because they go, well, our coach is out, now it's all on us, or we're going to be out of a gig too.
Well, Connor Casey owes us for that stupid red card way back when.
Oh, God, yeah.
So I'm fully expecting him to lose on purpose. And if he doesn't, I'm going to be very upset. In all seriousness, though, this is probably the worst timing for the Crew to play a team this bad because we could possibly lose. I will be nervous, honestly. They're not a good team in terms of their actual performance, but you know, like Mike said, they're a decent team on paper, and this Crew team is really lacking in confidence. So you know, they're away from home. Maybe they can get a result, and if they do get a result, I'm gonna start freaking out. I'm gonna be very concerned about this team. But you know, hopefully that won't happen. The other downside to this is if they do win, can we really be confident that they've turned a corner, or is it just, oh, well, yeah, they beat Colorado, who's historically bad.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. It's kind of a no-win scenario for us from a morale standpoint.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's one of those things like, okay, we didn't lose against them. Good. That's about as positive as it gets at this point. So, but yeah, I'm with you. Anything but a win would just be devastating, I feel like, right now. And, you know, Colorado is not a tough place to play in terms of an environment. Yes, you're a mile high, so there is that. But, you know, the fans, or all six of them that go to games, they don't care. They don't have a real supporter section. So it's not like there's an intimidation factor or anything like that. So they have, I don't want to say I'm rooting and pulling with my heart here, but for the love of God, they have to get a win in this game.
Was the Connor Casey red card the one that was the Hooper Vint incident? Was that the one, if anybody remembers that one?
I believe that may have been. That seems the to unjust, pass.
The unjust red card to Hooper Vint. Yeah, I'm with you guys. I think it's a... you know, if Colorado somehow pulls out a result on this, full on, we're smashing the panic button. We might have to order another panic button because we broke the panic button. But, yeah, it could be bad. But like you guys said, again, stupid question. Why can't Wallace play for Colorado?
Because he's our player.
Yeah, it's part of the interleague loan. It's part of the
Okay, because, I mean, you see, like, the question I have, because I think James Rodriguez played against Real Madrid in like Champions League one time or something like that. So I wasn't sure if that was, I don't read the rules, guys. I'm sorry. But, yeah, it should be a fun game. It's going to definitely be you're going to get a lot of answers to some questions that, are out there lurking. And I'm not sure that we may like some of the answers, if that makes sense.
How much of an unmitigated disaster would a loss be if Kai Kamara scores the game-winning goal or notable goals?
Tragic.
100%. That's all I was thinking about when I was watching part of the Rapids game over the weekend, is that if that guy scores against the Crew, I'm going to throw my remote into the TV.
I really just want Colorado to get a penalty and Kai Kamara to once again demand that he take the penalty and then miss. Like, that's really what I want.
He missed over the weekend, actually, a PK, if I'm not mistaken.
He's not. Yeah, he's.
Oh, no.
I know that I've been a Kai Kamara hater for many years on this podcast, but he got into it. I don't think we talked about it. He got into it with a Kansas City reporter a while back and tweeted like this 6-minute long video about how hurt he was. And he named the reporter who reported on this and basically told all of his fans to brigade this guy on his social media accounts because the reporter had quoted Sporting Kansas City's coach as saying that when Kamara got back from Norwich, he was a different guy and he was like all about number one and not a team player anymore. And basically Kai called the guy a liar and said like that the city of Kansas City needs to hold this guy accountable, blah, 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 until the reporter released the audio from him saying that, at which point Kai deleted the video. But, you know, Kai is still kind of a kind of a troublemaker. So I don't feel bad about, you know, the way things ended in Columbus. But yeah, it would suck if he scored. That would definitely not be fun.
I will say this: Kai Kamara, as an individual, a charitable and philanthropic person, absolutely A+, does incredible work across the world, and in Sierra Leone, his native country.
Absolutely.
But as a soccer player, oh God, and a teammate, is, I mean, not saying that as someone who's been a teammate of his, but just reading and catching everything. Yeah, screw him. I hope to God that, if anything we can lose, just do not let him beat us. But I don't think Crew's going to lose. I think we'll find out after we get some picks in, but before we get any picks in, I want to remind you again about our title sponsor, 180 Property Development. 180 Property Development, creating uplifting environments that enrich community life in Columbus, Ohio. Have a property design or development need? Build something together with 180 Property Development. Learn more at 180propertydevelopment.com. Fellas, I need some picks. Mike Krosky, why don't you lead us off?
All right. Again, like I said, I don't want to think with my heart. I want to think with my head. But I'm going to say the Crew pull it out 1-0.
All right. I like the sound of that so far. Ralph, what you thinking?
I like Mike's, but I don't want to copy him. But I will. So 1-0 Crew.
1-0 Crew. Okay, we're 2-for-2 so far. Stanek, let's hear it.
All right, so I think we're going to give up an early goal, and everybody's going to freak out, and then we're going to get two other goals and pull out a win, and then there's going to be talk that the team is turning a corner, and then we're going to not turn a corner. But I do think we'll win. I'm going to say 2-1.
Ooh, I like that. I think I liked where you were going there. I think Crew give up an early goal. People worry about it. Score two goals. Suddenly they got a lead. Score two more. Oh, yeah. Finally, we're going to break the slump. We're going to score our way out of it. Everything's going to be gravy the rest of the season. Crew win this game 4-1 and go undefeated for the rest of the 2019 campaign. That's right.
That's bold. My God.
No, we are doomed. Kai is going to score 4 goals now. I mean,
that might be the most homer comment you've ever made on this.
I needed it. Look at how bad this team's playing. I need to singularly will them onto a winning streak.
It's all on Bart now. It's all on his shoulders, everybody. Well, here's the thing. I just did a little research here. Kai Kamara did not miss a PK this weekend. He had a wide open goal in the six and did a very Chris Wondolowski type play and missed it completely. But 2 weeks ago he had a PK. That's what I was thinking.
That's sad. No.
I know it's gonna be hard to sleep tonight, guys, with that kind of news. But can I throw one more thing out there?
Yeah. Go ahead. Throw away.
So prior to the season, Caleb Porter said he had been studying a 3-5-2 formation and what all goes into that. And I've been thinking about it the last couple of days. And if you're talking about getting your best field players out there, to me, and especially given the fact that we don't really have any real outside backs anymore, I would love to see this happen. I don't think it will, because that takes a lot of time to implement and all this stuff. But I would love to see Zardes and Akam up top, Santos on the left, Higuain at center, Robinho on the right, with two holding mids of Trapp and Guzman, and then Soro, Mensah, and Williams in the back. I'm just trying to think, what the heck can we do? Because if you have Santos and Robinho on the natural side, they could whip in some crosses, things like that.
I don't think they have the gas to go full 90 to the run back and cover on defense, though. So.
Can we just start out like that? I just want to see something. This is so frustrating.
That could be a halftime adjustment. Maybe that's something you trot out in the first 45 minutes. But that, they got to have their conditioning and they got to have their legs under them to do all that running as wingbacks.
I would try that against a team that we're expecting to lose against. that way. If
it's so Colorado, so it could
doesn't
be fine.
Work, yeah. It doesn't work, but we need 3 points from Colorado. Like, I cannot stress this enough about how much I'm going to be freaking out if we don't win. If we cannot beat this Colorado team, you might as well just write off the season. I mean, and it's so early, and I hate to say that before the transfer window, but I can't see a situation where if we can't get this offense going, who would you even bring in to change the lack of production? It feels like a system thing. It feels like a coaching thing. It doesn't feel like, oh, we just need a better winger, or oh, we just need another central midfielder. I'm already panicking, and if we lose this game, I'm gonna lose my mind.
It is a system thing in the sense that we don't have the wing backs to push up to make this work. I mean, that's what this system is predicated on, which is why I don't understand why he won't move away from it. I liked when he tried the 4-3-3 the other day. I thought that was a good, but obviously when you have Higuain in, what do you do?
I think a flat 4-4-2 would do decently, but that's just, I'm not a coach, though.
Well, and I was thinking about that too, but the problem is, I don't know that we really have guys to play an outside mid role quite in that way. I think you can get away with it with Santos and Rubinho in a 3-5-2, but in a 4-4-2, I'm just not sure, especially with Rubinho. I think Santos maybe, but there's something about Rubinho's game, I just don't know if that would work. So, I don't know. I'm racking my brain, and I'm sure Caleb Porter is much more than us dopey fans, but I don't know.
I would hope.
He better be.
I would hope. I hope he's not chill. I don't think so. Everything about his personality, he seems to be the kind of, you know, hard on his sleeve type guy. And so I hope there's a little bit of worry in him right now with this situation. And hopefully, again, they're going to prove me right, as they have many times before. And, again, win this game and then win every game for the rest of the season.
Well, that's happened before.
Well, maybe not that particular scenario, but they've proven me right most of the times. True fact, they have won 100% of whenever they've won, I've picked them to win. So I don't know exactly how that stat works, but I think that's good. It's a good sign.
That's science. I mean, that's just science. You can't argue with science.
When have you picked them to lose?
And that's going to do it for this week's Massive Report. It's been a great one. Yeah. All right.
Bye, buddy.
No, in seriousness, yeah, we'll see y'all. Mike Krosky, Ralph Shadell, Alex Stanek. It is a pleasure, guys. We'll have Brian Phillips back hopefully next week, and we'll be talking about a tremendous 4-0 win and the Crew turning things around. Until then, bye, buddies.